You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And welcome, everybody, as you always are, to my couch here on LA Talk Radio, as the man said. Today, as always, I have an inspirational guest, and we're going to be talking about sort of coping with everything that's going on around us in our world and also in our inner fears, trying to find peace. Everyone has their own fears, and you know, everyone is connected to all. And we're watching the news. We're trying to stay calm. We're trying to keep our families healthy, maintain our whatever we do in life to keep ourselves financially comfortable. And yet with all this going on in the media that we're constantly exposed to, there's a lot of turmoil and chaos within and without. So today we're going to find out how to harness that, how to manage that, and really learn from one of my favorite guests ever. There he is, Oren J. Sofer. Hey.
Hi, Michelle. Glad to be here.
Oh, it's so nice to have you back on.
Thanks.
You're the best. And I love your new book, and we're going to be talking about that today. Mm. One of the people who did an amazing short rundown of your book, I'm just going to read it because it says, it's a beautiful and poignant invitation to meet the crisis of our current world and communities with the power of contemplative practice. And this will help us acknowledge the pain that we're all experiencing and reveals how we can respond directly with awareness and tenderness. And that's what you're all about.
So yeah, and I think those are Lama Rod Owen's words.
Lama Rod Owen. Thank you so much for that. And here is the book. It's a beautiful read, folks. If you want to pick it up and get a little inspiration, a lot of inspiration. Took a lot of time to put this together and really contemplation to help people. Let me do your bio a little bit here so folks will know who you are if they haven't seen the show before. Oren, you teach Buddhist meditation, mindfulness, and communication internationally. Oren J. Sofer holds a degree in comparative religion from Columbia University and is a certified trainer of nonviolent communication and a somatic experiencing practitioner for the healing of trauma that we all have. And of course, you guys might have seen him on the show before because I had him on maybe a couple of years ago, I would say, Oren, you were here. The best-selling title we talked about was Say What You Mean, which was a mindful approach to nonviolent communication. And of course, the latest we're talking about, his book, Your Heart Was Made for This, Contemplating Practices for Meeting meeting a World in Crisis with Courage, Integrity, and Love. So it's beautifully said, and I really appreciate it. And you really run down all the things we need to really contemplate and sort of not work on, but just to maybe practice in our everyday lives in order to keep centered, help others, and just sort of, especially in this world of chaos. I mean, does it seem to you like it's been crazier in the, I mean, yes, COVID, we've all dealt with that, but
yeah,
crazier than ever in this energy in this world?
Absolutely, it does. Wow. And you mentioned COVID, and that was the initial inspiration to write the book. The crazy year we all had in 2020 was when I started writing the book and wanted to provide some more resources to people other than the standard tools for meditation, which are great, but are also limited because there's a lot of times and a lot of circumstances where we're not able to just sit still and follow our breath or explore in that kind of silent internal way. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that we can't develop inner resources. So I started writing the book in 2020. And as you noted, you know, here we are 3 years later, and so much is changed and is really heartrending. I think a lot of us have a palpable feeling that there's something deeply wrong in our world. And whether we're thinking about the ecological crisis, the economic situation, political polarization, the wars that are unfolding, it's a really challenging time to be here and to be human on the planet. But that also means, of course, that there's an opportunity for us to play a role in the healing and transformation that's being called for. And when we can find the inner resources to be in relationship with what's happening in a clear and balanced way, there's this opportunity to do something that's really meaningful. And that's what the book is aimed at, is how do we find our right relationship so we can contribute in a way that makes sense to each of us?
Boy, and you said it right. I mean, makes sense to each of us. So it really, if we want to make that journey to help others, you know, it has to start within.
Yeah.
And that's where it's all at. And how do we calm ourselves? So that sort of was your inspiration during COVID. We all had, I guess, some downtime from being out there in the world to write. But I mean, now with what's going on around the world, all the crises taking place, everyone is suffering. Let's jump into it and talk about some of the qualities that you discussed, because I want to roll down sort of through the amazing chapters that you write, because I mean, it is sort of like a guide to how we sort of train ourselves to thinking differently and coping differently. And also I appreciate the way you explain that we can step into these things and not, you know, all of a sudden what you have to do is get into the Buddha position, go into the home immediately.
We were chatting just before we started, and I was mentioning I'm a new parent. And so I have a newfound appreciation for the challenges of raising a family. And, you know, this stuff needs to be practical. We need to be able to do it in the midst of our busy, full, hectic lives. And that's really the aim for the book, is that it's a companion for people in their lives. It's not something you need to go on retreat for or disappear from your responsibilities for, but something we can actually apply in the moment of washing dishes, doing laundry, responding to emails, and use our time more effectively to build a solid inner foundation.
True. That's beautiful. Congratulations on your little one.
Thanks. Yeah.
It's just incredible. I mean, when we have little people, you know, come into our lives, we can never imagine that love that we would experience. You know, we think we're, you know, all up into with our meditations and just loving and everything that we've worked on. Then you see this little soul and you go, oh my gosh, wow, I'm responsible for this little soul.
Right.
And so amazing. That's a wonderful.
And also, of course, the, endless teachings that we receive about our own limitations and challenges, you know, talk about cultivating qualities like patience and compassion and empathy. It's all these things that, you know, I've written about, and certainly was writing the book while my wife was pregnant, and then edited the second draft, which was a major, major revision of the book. In those early days of sleepless newborn nights. So there's a, it was a labor of love, and I'm so excited to be sharing it with you and others.
Oh, well, thank you for that. So, let's talk about the six core qualities that you describe in your book for sort of training our hearts and our minds and, of course, our bodies to heal the grief, all the trauma we're going through, the emotional wounds. And this is that we carry from our personal issues. This is my job, you know, and we, you know, have all these deep subconsciously buried traumas growing up, whatever they may be. We all have it. We all have it. And also, of course, what's going on in our external world to keep us just a little more stable. And, you know, we look back, speaking about your little one, and we think, wow, I was so much happier when I didn't have to worry about all that. But so let's help everybody out with, let's look at the six core qualities.
Sure.
So attention is sort of the first one we talk about. I like the aspiration too, but attention is really important. And what exactly do you mean that in terms of helping our healing?
Absolutely. So the first insight I think that we have in any kind of healing work or contemplative path is the recognition that we actually can have a choice over where we place our attention and how we use it. And we each do this every day, all the time, but we don't notice it. So we shift our attention, say, from what we're looking at to what we're thinking to what we're feeling. But a lot of the time what's happening is we're actually getting pulled around during the day, either by whatever happens to be coming at us in the moment, or by the habits and patterns that have built up over the years. Mm. So we're not consciously choosing where we place our attention, which is why we're so exhausted at the end of the day and so strung out. And we're contending continually with a multi-billion dollar industry that is vying for our attention to capture and retain our attention, to generate profit, to influence action. Reclaiming our attention and making more conscious choices about what we pay attention to and how we pay attention is a radical act. And so this is where the journey begins, because if we can't begin to choose where we place our attention, we're a slave to to our habits, and we're a slave to the media and society. Yes, I also want to mention, Michelle, you mentioned trauma. You mentioned how all of us are affected by this in different ways, just being alive in the modern era. And so as we kind of dig into some of the nuts and bolts of this, I also want to mention kind of three of the core guiding principles that I think can be really useful to all of us today as we're contending with so
That'd
much.
That'd be great.
Right? So so the first is, whatever we're doing, whether you're doing a contemplative practice, whether you're doing some psychological work, whether you're, you know, just digging into a project, it's helpful to try to start from a place of being oriented, just connecting with what's around you and recognizing your wholeness. So rather than orienting to our brokenness, our pain, our limitations, orienting towards our wholeness, orienting towards our strengths, this creates a foundation for our inner work and our work in the world. This is the first principle of trauma-informed practice. The second is to start small, one step at a time, and just take things slowly in manageable bits.
Yes.
And this is particularly important, as you mentioned, like some of the grief a lot of us are feeling, some of the fear and anxiety that we might be contending with in different areas of our life or our world. So just starting small, going one step at a time. The third principle is to support and access our natural healing capacity by moving back and forth between whatever's challenging or difficult to a resource, right? These are some of the core tools we use in healing and psychology. So these frame the work that we explore in the book.
That's beautiful. I really love that. I enjoyed your story about, you know, talking about attention and then the aspiration. You said, where you came down with Lyme disease. That is one of the worst. I mean, I've had patients who had that and they're just miserable. Very hard to deal with and treat. And then of course you had to take care of your dad at the time, who was going through a lot of physical
health crisis too.
Can you share a little bit about how you got through all that?
Sure. Absolutely. So we're moving on to here, the second core quality you mentioned of aspiration, which is our ability to connect with a sense of what's possible for us personally and collectively. It's the sense that there's another way to live. There's a better future possible for our communities, for ourselves, for our children. So the story I tell in the book was I was feeling miserable and sick, lying on the couch in my dad's living room. And so I noticed, because of my training in mindfulness, I noticed where my attention was going. I noticed that my attention was in this rut of assuming that I knew what the future was going to be, that I was going to keep feeling sick and that nothing was going to work. And so I noticed that habit, I noticed that rumination, and then I made a choice to place my attention in a different way, to say, well, what's actually happening right now? So this is a little bit about mindfulness too, which is one of the core qualities, differentiating between what's actually occurring and the stories we're telling ourselves about it.
Right.
So telling That's myself huge. A story about what the future was going to be and how I was never going to get well, versus recognizing I feel tired. My body hurts a little bit, but otherwise, right now in this moment, I'm okay. I can think clearly. Yeah. I can, you know, move around the house and take care of myself. So I stood up and I started doing some breathing exercises and some movement. Yes. And I connected with this aspiration. Very simple one, very moment to moment, like, let's just do what I can in the moment to take care of myself. What can I do to feel better right now? And sometimes aspiration is that simple. It's like, what can I do to take care of myself this afternoon? I take a walk and have a cup of tea.
Right.
And so I started to, you know, my body still hurt, but I stopped suffering in my mind. I stopped feeling this sort of weight and this burden of the awful imagined fantasy of the future.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. I mean, good for you. That's how it helps, you know, the aspiration. It's kind of baby steps, like you said.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, you know, beat themselves up constantly. Those thoughts, I should be doing this. I should
right.
be. I've got to do this, but I, you know, and they sort of say, what's wrong with me? And I find this more prevalent in the male energy. I'm just saying, it's that mm-hmm. it's that warrior sort of spirit that says, what's wrong with me? Why can't I, you know, so it's a great way to think about, you know, helping yourself and contemplation. And that being said, another core principle is energy, you know,
right.
that you talk about.
Right.
The way we can get more energy in,
yeah.
in order to help ourselves out.
Yeah.
So what are some of the ways?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, we all know how precious our energy is and that we have a limited capacity of it every day. So there's two things here. The first is to start to understand our patterns and habits around energy. And one of the connections that I make in the book is that for many of us, I think that we have unconsciously internalized the dominant paradigm of our society, this sort of fossil
sure.
fuel model of
oh, yeah.
extractive right. use of energy, and then this kind of explosive, as much as possible, as fast as possible. And we see this, many of us, in how we work, how we live, where we push past limits, we override our sense of tiredness, our need for rest with caffeine, with sheer willpower.
Wow.
And this is a very unsustainable
right.
use of energy. Yeah. We crash and burn at the end of the day, and then we somehow right. manage to get up and do it all again tomorrow.
Yeah.
So what we need internally, as much as we need it collectively, is a more renewable and sustainable source
right.
of energy. So some of the ways to cultivate this and to get familiar with it, one of the most powerful sources of sustainable energy we have is, guess what? Aspiration is actually connecting
yes.
with what's important
yes.
to us. So going
yes.
back to that story,
yes, exactly.
lying on the couch, feeling miserable for myself,
right.
not having any energy.
Oh.
it was connecting with my aspiration to do what was in my power to feel better. That started to bring forth a little bit of energy. If we don't have an aspiration,
yeah.
it's
yeah.
really hard to get any yeah. energy going. So
sure.
the sense of willingness, what is important to me? What do I want to do? What do I want to give my energy mm-hmm. to? This is a very important source of energy.
Sure.
The other central principle that I explore in that chapter is beginning to understand how much energy is actually needed for different things.
Right.
Many of right. us, and I've seen this in myself, tend to overexert ourselves with energy. And we can see this in things as simple as, you know, like, how we're sitting at the computer typing an
yeah.
email. Is there tension
sure.
and stress in our
oh,
shoulders
yeah.
and our hands
sure.
and our jaw? What would it be like to just relax and write the email in a more easeful way? We start conserving energy in that way.
Right.
To being in a conversation and feeling like
yeah.
I need to push versus relaxing into ourselves, claiming
right.
our space, and then speaking from our center. This is a way of conserving energy.
Mm-hmm.
So to
yeah.
do this, to learn how to use energy in a more skillful and sustainable way. Often the first step is to try to do a little bit less so that you can start to feel more of what's happening and get back in touch with those signals of, do I need a little rest? Am I contracting, stressing, pushing a little bit too hard? How do I actually modulate how much energy I use? And I can give one analogy just to cap this off. If you think about, say, lifting a heavy object, you know, if you just rush in there and try to lift it really quickly without attending to how you're orienting your body, particularly at this age,
mm-hmm.
you're likely to like throw something out or pull a muscle, right? Whereas if we
sure.
approach the task of lifting that heavy object
yeah.
in a clear and conscious way, what do? It's like we take a wide stance, we squat, we take a deep breath, we
mm-hmm.
align ourselves. We have much more power.
Sure.
And
right.
we can conserve energy when we are aligned and sort of conscious about how we're applying energy. And so we can
yeah.
translate that physical principle
right.
into the rest of our life and attend to the alignment and how much force we're exerting.
Yeah, no, that's really true. Beautifully said. Mm-hmm. One of my favorites is telling people to go take a break if they can.
Absolutely.
You know, especially whatever, if they're working, you know, warming a seat in an office, or if they're working remotely, whatever that is, if they have access to any kind of earth, mm-hmm. to go out and connect and ground themselves, you know, that whole thing about the Schumann frequency and, you know, how our brains can sort of normalize and stabilize when we're connected to the, what is that, 7.85 hertz or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah.
You touch on a really essential aspect of it, Michelle, which is the undeniable truth that our access to energy is directly related to our capacity to rest. Mm-hmm. And this need for balance, right?
Yeah.
Which is one of the themes that, you know, so many of us are working with all the time in our life, and that runs through the book. And one of the things I talk about in the chapter on rest, which comes later in the book, is again how to make it really practical. And this too comes back to how we use our attention. So not all of us have the luxury, certainly not all of the time, right, of being able to go outside and be on the earth, or even take a 5 or 10 minute break when things are really busy, when we have a lot of responsibilities. Mm-hmm. But then there's that question of like, okay, so you've got a minute or two, right? Mm-hmm. You're waiting in line, you're, I don't know, in between things.
Right.
How do we use that 1 or 2 minutes? Do we pull out the device and start scrolling? Do we ruminate on things that we're worried about? Or, you know, can you close your eyes and just rest for a minute, or look up at the sky and enjoy the clouds and the view? So there are these ways that we can have just sort of short moments of rest and nourishment throughout the day when we're aware and making more conscious choices about how we use our attention.
That's such a beautiful thing to say too, because what do they say? Like 80%, 85% of the thoughts we think today are the same thoughts we think tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, I mean,
through.
Mm-hmm. We get up. So let's change it up. Let's think. Let's be aware of, you know, our mindfulness in the moment.
Yeah.
And look up, look around us, be conscious, being in the now, and all that stuff. So, no, that's really important. You also talk about the wisdom, how important it is to have wisdom. Of course, people go, well, of course I have wisdom. What do you mean by that, Orin J. Sofer?
One of the myths about wisdom, I think, is that it comes automatically with age. Would it, you know? And I think that not to be sort of, you know, arrogant or pompous here, I'm still a young man. There is a certain wisdom. There is a certain wisdom that comes from just from living. And we can develop more wisdom by paying careful attention and by being open to feedback. So these are like two of the core causes for developing wisdom, is looking carefully at things and maintaining awareness. It's like, how do we learn? We learn by tracking. What's happening? Like, what are the choices I'm making? Why am I making them? And then what's the effect? If we don't pay attention to that whole process, we don't learn from our choices.
Right.
You know, and I'm sure many of us have had experiences of meeting people who, you know, ourselves included in certain times, where we don't learn from our experiences. We don't learn from our choices because we're not actually paying careful attention. Or the other side, because we can't figure everything out for ourselves, we're not listening to those around us. We're not open to feedback, to taking in the things that other people are seeing.
Sure.
So in Buddhism, which is sort of my grounding and training in contemplative practice, wisdom is the ability to differentiate between what's helpful and what's harmful in our own lives, in the ways we think, in the ways we speak, in the ways we act. And it's coming to a deeper understanding of how and why we suffer.
Right.
Of really learning the mechanism in our own heart of, how do I make things harder for myself and others unnecessarily? And how do I let go? How do I be in right relationship with a world that's always changing and that's beyond my control? And this comes from experience, from paying careful attention to things. And this is where these core qualities that I explore in part one, particularly of energy, mindfulness, and concentration, which is that ability to stay focused and connected over time, lead to wisdom. It's by paying attention, by tracking things, by really focusing on what's important, that every day we're learning from what's happening.
Boy, is that true. Thank you so much for that. It's so true. And you're right about, you know, supposedly as we get older, we have more wisdom. Well, we can if we do all those things you suggest. But sometimes, you know, I suggest that people, you know, keep doing the same thing over sort of. And I say, well, you know what? I guess you need to learn it. And you're not ready yet. Maybe you're not ready to learn it. And you need to keep going through the same, I don't know, situations, relationships, work environments, beating yourself. You need to go through that until you finally say, I can't do this anymore. I guess we all get to our place. But that's wisdom too, is realizing that, right?
Yeah. And I'm so glad you mentioned that, Michelle, the sense of feeling stuck in something, right? Because I think this is an experience that all of us have in different ways. And whether it's, you know, feeling stuck in a kind of helplessness or some self-criticism or some behavior that we're doing in life. I always like to talk about two different ways to engage and relate to that. And I'm curious how this lines up with your work and the way you think about this. So one is, if we're doing something that isn't helping us and that we feel stuck in, one of the central ways that I like to encourage people to work with that is first to develop an alternative that feels better. We need something else to do, whether it's whether it's a mental habit or a physical behavior. And so this is the book is really oriented towards developing inner resources that are better options, things like being generous, feeling grateful, being patient. So this is one area of development. The other area of development is once we have some of that alternative, is to then from that place of feeling more resourced, feeling more grounded, feeling a little bit better, to actually then come back to the unskillful, harmful habit and begin to understand it in a different way, to actually investigate it and take it apart and see, like, what am I getting out of this? What am I not getting out of this? And, and what is this really calling for? What's needed here in my heart?
No, beautifully said. And that's exactly what we ask, you know, as psychologists is, you know, what are you getting out of this? Or is this comfort? Is this just comfort? Pain is comfort for you. And you just can't live like that anymore. That's why I'm here. You know, that's why you've come here. And what can we do to change it up? Baby steps, you know, like you said. That's what it's all about. So here it is, folks. Here's the book. It's beautiful, by the way. I love it. I love the rainbow colors.
And, me too. I'm so happy with the cover my publisher, Shambhala, chose.
You did a nice job. All right. And there it is. Your heart was made for this. Okay. And it's beautiful about learning how you can, so from a, I think more of a Buddhist point of view, but I mean, it's not in a way, it's just your teachings and what you, you know, do to help others. Contemplative practices for meeting a world in crisis with courage, integrity, and love.
Yeah. And I'd love to talk about that phrase, contemplative practices. Like, what does that actually even mean, right? So I'm a meditation teacher. It's one of the main things I do in addition to communication. But what I've seen and noticed over the years, and particularly today, when there's so much happening that's so stressful, as I was saying earlier, is that not everyone connects with meditation. It's not the right medicine for everyone. And certainly even for those of us who love to meditate, not all the time. Right. So one of the things that, you know, has shifted in my life being a new parent is I have much less time to sit quietly and meditate because I'm up at 5:30 in the morning and changing diapers and cooking food and cleaning dishes. So does that mean that my, you know, inner life goes out the window? No. So Meditation is one form of contemplative practice, just like running is one form of exercise. Not everyone likes to run, but all of us hopefully recognize the value of exercise and find ways to do it. So contemplative practice is about having a relationship with our inner life. It can be anything that strengthens awareness, reflection, mm-hmm. and connects us with the sense of meaning, purpose, or perspective in life. And that means art, music, storytelling, mm-hmm. relationship, mm-hmm. having a cup of tea, taking a walk with a friend, mm-hmm. doing the laundry, any of these things can be a kind of contemplative practice if we know how to use it in that way. And that's really what the book is trying to do, is to trying to give people options, a whole kind of resource guide or menu of ways to use the time that we have every day that we've been given, that's borrowed. We never know, right? So to actually use the time that we have most efficiently and wisely, so that we're building a well of inner resources to give back and
really true.
To get the most out of our time.
Oh, that's beautifully said. And you know, that which we put out from within is what we do get back, I believe. And, you know, all of the electromagnetic scientists who are now studying our connection to the quantum universe and, you know, all that stuff. I loved the importance that you stress on generosity, having gratitude, compassion, and empathy. I mean, that really strengthens your own connection to others. And again, that which you put out or that which you feel, the love towards others, the kindness, the generosity, I call them the gentle thoughts. It really does resonate back to you in this, I don't know, this mirror of, I don't mean to get weird or anything, but the quantum universe does reflect back to us exactly what we're feeling.
Sure.
As a mirror.
Very much so. And I think that we can each see this directly and empirically in our own experience. If we look carefully, we recognize, we can see right here and now that we are the first ones to suffer from our own hatred or cruelty or resentment, and that we're the first ones to benefit from generosity, gratitude, or compassion. The Dalai Lama calls it enlightened self-interest. Right. It's recognizing what's truly in our best interest, which is that, you know, actually feels better to be kind. it actually feels better to relate to others in the world with empathy than to shut down or cut off or move into a sense of othering.
Yes. And of course, we all are connected with a belief system, a religion, a cultural history. We all have our own cause and our own, you know, inner connection with whoever we consider our people to be. So many of us say, you know, the terrorists, where's the saint coming from? Well, it goes back a millennial. I mean, so many years and the hate and the cultures, and I'm talking about everything around the world that's going on, not only what's happening at Gaza, but I'm talking
everything. And I think it's important to recognize that qualities like empathy or compassion, this comes up a lot when I teach meditation. It's, you know, well, so what? I'm supposed to love someone who's like blowing people up, or I'm supposed to love someone who's, you know, indiscriminately bombing and killing children and families? No. But what does it mean? What does it mean to wish that those people be free in their hearts from hatred and confusion? Right. That's a kind of empathy. It's like, may you recognize and be connected to your own goodness. May you be free from the forces of fear and hatred and revenge and confusion. There's this deeper kind of empathy that aims at our shared humanity that is distinct from condoning people's actions.
Right.
And from wanting to be friends or liking someone. That's not what we're talking about.
Right, right. And it's so hard and so confusing, and you are such a highly, you know, spiritual teacher for other people to help them in their journey, which is beautiful and all that. And, you know, every day, though, I find we're all talking about, yes, but my cousin, her right. and her best friend were at the concert that were attacked.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it is hard.
We were, and then we were connected. We were, I knew something was wrong. I knew something was wrong. I couldn't describe it. We were connected to the other part of the world. Yeah. It didn't feel right that day, you know, so that kind of thing. And how do we, you know, and I know you're not saying, oh, love, peace, empathy and all that. But what you're saying is pray for peace within everybody. Pray for calmness. And it's a very
pray for it and talk about it. Talk about it and hold the vision of that, of what's possible. You know, nothing changes if we don't actually have a sense of where we want to go.
Right.
Right. Exactly. So we need to be able, this is again going back to aspirations on a collective level. Mm-hmm. If you look at any social movement for rights, for self-determination, for equity, for justice, it begins with an articulation of what's possible, with a sense of vision of what's possible. It's why the United States Declaration of Independence has sparked revolutions around the world for over 200 years. It's why it's founding document that's still shaping our society today and calling for us to live up to those ideals. Sure. So to be able to say, like, let's articulate a vision of where we want to go and what's possible. And it's not easy. It's incredibly challenging. And I think each of us needs to be, as you said, like, you know, have gentle thoughts towards ourselves and be really accepting and tender with exactly where we're at. It's like whatever we're feeling is okay. And to just start there. Sure. And then take the steps we need to nourish ourselves, to take care of ourselves, so that we can be in a better position to engage and respond and be there for those who need us.
Sure, and our family members. And your heart was made for this. This is the book right now. It's really beautiful. It will really help you folks kind of get through a lot of stuff, the inner turmoil we're experiencing in ourselves as it relates to the world. And also, you know, our daily lives are our pressures that we experience right now and trying to make sense of that in our own relationships, families, friends, and workplace, in our small little worlds that we're experiencing, and then trying to extend that out there into, you know, the world and hopefully eventually the universe. We're going to get disclosure sometime, Orin J. I know that. It's coming. Anyway. I wanted to talk also about, you described some personal experiences that have helped you overcome crises in your life.
Yeah.
So maybe you can share with us a little bit about a personal experience that sort of illustrates the transformation power of the practices that you talk about in your book that you went through.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I think one of the most profound for me on a personal level was my relationship with my father. Who struggled a lot with depression and trauma and with his health. And, you know, as we all probably know, when we really care about someone, when we love them, it's painful to see them suffer, to see them struggle. And, you know, we want to be able to contribute. We want them to be healthy. We want them to be happy. And it's not always possible.
Yeah.
So for me, over the years, I've had to draw on a lot of these different qualities and practices to find my way to love him and to be in relationship with him. And hold that pain and the helplessness that comes up in relation to our family members or our friends who are struggling. And so, you know, having patience, cultivating patience, having compassion for myself. Around that.
Yes.
And one of the key qualities that I, you know, that I learned through our relationship up until and since he passed away is this quality that's called equanimity in Buddhism, which is about balance and non-reactivity. Mm-hmm. It's about having perspective on things. Mm-hmm. And so the more I was able to accept him for who he was, kind of have some perspective on what's mine to do as as his son, as someone who cares about him, and what was beyond my control, beyond my power to do, the more I was able to be close with him and to love him and to find at the end of his life the places where I wasn't able to let go, you know, to learn from the grief and the remorse of that, how to accept people just as they are so that we can love them as fully as we want to.
Beautiful, beautifully said.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. It's I'm with you all the way. In my work, I try to teach people to sort of, hopefully they have information about their parents' backstory, you know, so they'll understand their trauma and what they went through. So I teach them to go through a movie about blah, 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 you know, kind of rewinding, blah, 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 like you're rewinding a film about, whoa, here's the experiences my dad was having, and he had a traumatic upbringing, and he felt he was not worthy and unloved, and on and on and on. So you can have compassion, and that, like you said, that's the thing, and recognizing the unresolved things. And sometimes we don't always get a chance to do that.
Yeah,
I guess because.
Yeah, at least not in person, but we, you know, we can find that resolution and healing even after someone's gone, right? In our own hearts,
to sort of
receive the lessons and the benefits of their life, and then then share those with others. You know, another you mentioned Lyme. I've had another health journey with some chronic digestive stuff.
Oh no.
There was I talk about in the chapter on compassion, very kind of humbling experience I had actually down there in LA when I was traveling, of being really sick and coming to a point where I recognized that I needed help, that I needed more help, and that there had been this idea of doing it on my own and only using alternative medicine and alternative healthcare practices, and recognizing both having the wisdom to see what was happening, but then also the compassion for myself to say, oh, you know, I need help, and it's okay to go see a regular doctor and take some medicine. And it was a real turning point in my, in my own health and my own healing, to access that compassion and to see more clearly that it wasn't mutually exclusive. It wasn't like, you know, it's either or, but like I could get help from an allopathic doctor and I could still pursue alternative medicine at the same time. And that was really freeing and had a huge impact on my, on my health.
Good for you. No, and it's really true. I know a lot of people who are, you know, into the alternative medicine route, and they do, they go through the situation, you know, where they decide, it's getting to that point where I'm going to go ahead and go with traditional medicine practices. And especially now, you know, because things have been streamlined a bit more. We won't get into big pharma. But
yeah, that's a whole nother conversation.
We won't go there. But no, I hear what you're saying. It's really important, and good for you for doing that. And you did get the help you needed, pretty much. You healed. Good, good. I remember. And that was so cute the way you said, well, I came to LA and I got really sick. Well, that can happen. You know, it's, it's the energy, Warren J. Sutter.
Yeah.
But no, I'm just sort of kidding, I guess.
Some of the things I see, Michelle, you know, with people who are practicing in this way and working with this stuff is a sense of empowerment. It's like when we start to notice the habits and the patterns that are ruling our lives and start to be able to make different choices, we feel more empowered. We feel more energy. We feel more agency because we sense what's possible.
We sure
do. I have people come to me all the time and say, you know, I noticed I was starting to go down that path in my mind. And I said, I don't want to do that. And I was able to, you know, pull back and make a different choice inside. Or I noticed I was about to react in that conversation with that person.
I
noticed it because I've been practicing mindfulness, because I've been paying attention.
Yes.
And I was able to take a deep breath and not say that thing that was going to blow it out of the water. So these skills, you know, they change. They change us. They change our lives, and they're yes. incredibly empowering.
It's so true. And you touch on an important point at the end of your book, and it's one of my, I think, many people's and my challenges sometimes is forgiveness. Because again, we've all had, you know, we've all had trauma or issues, perhaps growing up, or you know, issues sometimes with other people, and we've been hurt, or we've been. It's about pain, you know. I always say anger is the, you know, is the tip of the iceberg. You know, right. pain is the underlying root.
Yeah,
you know, that's what it is. So it's trying to forgive, and as you said, you know, with your dad and mm-hmm. you know, other situations. Sometimes we just have to accept what we can't change, but also just try to forgive and ourselves. You really touched on that.
Yeah.
I think one of the most common things, like I said a little bit earlier, is that people beat themselves up too much about what they should be or what they have to be.
Yeah.
And I blame a lot of that on social media, of course, but also just from a general upbringing or what they're picking up from other people. Yes, introspection's wonderful. Mindfulness, awareness, as you said, I'm going to not blurt out my impulsive reaction to that person. I'm going to think about how I respond. But forgiveness is, what are some of the best ways you feel that people can forgive slowly from their pain, forgive others and themselves?
Yeah. It can be so freeing, and it is so hard, and it does take time. And I think for me, one of the places to start is first just clarifying what we mean by it, because I think there's so many misunderstandings of what we mean by forgiveness, and that forgiveness doesn't mean forgetting what happened.
Right.
It doesn't mean condoning it. It doesn't mean pretending that it's okay or we're okay or skipping over. In fact, it's quite the opposite, that forgiveness depends on this kind of honest reckoning and acknowledgement of what happened. That's the foundation. And that we forgive not to absolve someone else. We forgive to free our own hearts from the past so that we're not locked there. We're not stuck there. We're not chained there through our pain and our suffering. We release ourselves from that complicated relationship with the past. And so that's the first thing, is this understanding of what it is and why we do it. The second is watering the seed of forgiveness. And this is a metaphor that I know you know from checking the book out, that runs throughout the book, which is this idea that each of these beautiful qualities and traits exist within us as potentials, as capacities. And with forgiveness, sometimes it's as simple as just saying, like, one day, I hope I will want to forgive you. Or one day, I hope I'm able to forgive myself. Just that much is the seed, and we can water it. We can just kind of recognize that here's this intention of where I want to head.
Right.
And that's the beginning of the journey.
That's beautiful. Yes, it is. And I think, you know, opening our hearts up and opening ourselves up to the possibilities, it just creates that, you know, widening of understanding. Like you said, watering the seeds for that understanding is beautiful. Well, Oren, thank you so much. It looks like we're getting almost out of time already. It just goes so fast whenever I interview you. But here's the book, folks. It is wonderful. You know, your heart was made for this. This is what you need to learn. And it's really going to teach you some contemplative practices, as well as, you know, how to get the courage of having more integrity and love. And your life will absolutely be changed positively by this book. So folks, I'm really encouraging my patients to get this book as well, because it is healing. It's not religious. It is,
it's human.
Really human. Well said, Oren J.
Yeah, it's about being human together and, you know, taking care of our hearts and building our inner resources. Thank you so much for having me, Michelle.
Oh, you're so welcome. It's always a pleasure to have you, and come on back again sometime. Great to talk with you.
Okay. You too.
All right. Take care now.
You too.
Bye. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining me here on the couch. Great interview. Go ahead and look at it again, latalkradio.com. It'll be up in the archives. And as I always say, try to take care of yourself first within, and then you'll be great for others. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.